Welcome to How I Lawyer, a podcast where I talk to attorneys from throughout the profession about what they do, why they do it, and how they do it well. I'm your host, Jonah Perlin, a law professor in Washington, D.C. This episode is sponsored, edited, and engineered by my friends at LawPods. LawPods is a professional podcast production company focused solely on attorney podcasting. I absolutely love working with them, and if you're considering becoming a legal podcaster or just want to learn more, check them out at lawpods.com. And now, let's get started. Hello, and welcome back. And I am so excited for today's panel opinion episode of How I Lawyer, where instead of my normal one-on-one interview style, I get to once again hear from a group of experts about a particular topic. And today's topic is one that is very close to my heart, which is the process for getting a judicial clerkship. And for this panel opinion episode, I'm excited to once again be partnering with my friends at the Appellate Project, which is a nonprofit dedicated to diversifying the appellate bar. I previously partnered with the Appellate Project on episode 103 about paths to becoming an appellate lawyer. We'll hear from four guests today who either previously clerked, are currently clerking, or will be clerking soon about what they've learned about this great process. With us today is former How I Lawyer guest and Appellate Project founder and executive director, Jeweria Khan. And so before we dive into hearing about the clerkship process, which is, I hope, what we'll spend most of our time together doing, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what TAP is doing to sort of demystify this clerkship application process, which I frankly just needs demystifying so that people can actually learn about how to get these jobs in the first place. And I know TAP's been really active in that space. So I thought we'd start with you and hear a little bit about what TAP's doing, and then we'll start with our fantastic panel.
Sure. Thanks so much for having us, Jonah. It's always a pleasure to be collaborating with you. So clerking, as I know we're going to discuss today, is a really important stepping stone for those interested in doing appellate practice. You don't have to clerk to do appellate work, but it does help. And so it's important to us to encourage our students to consider clerking and help them with that process. I did not know about clerkships and was certainly not cognizant of the value they have over your career when I was in law school. And I think that's true for a lot of first generation students, a lot of students of color. And so some of the resources we provide in our mentorship program, we pair our students with law clerks who are mentors. They could be recent law clerks or currently clerking. We arrange a lot of visits with clerks and discussions with them, whether it's in person or virtually, to demystify the process and have folks talk about what helped them be successful, but also create connections and networks for our students, because who you know really does help and matter. We do a lot of meetings with judges as well, where they talk about what they look for in clerks and what their clerks do and just demystify that process and how they prefer applications sent to them. We've also started doing one-on-one legal writing feedback where students are paired with a mentor who helps prepare their application, including clerkship application. And then we also share clerkship openings. So when judges are applying and sometimes they need somebody right away or they were newly confirmed, our students may not always be aware of those different opportunities, especially as I'm sure we'll talk about state appellate court or state clerkships are sort of, there's not a unified system for them. So we've seen a lot of success with just those methods of encouraging our students to consider clerkships, but also helping them be prepared for when they get to chambers. And then most recently, we are really excited to roll out a public-facing resource that anyone can access on our website. This is a clerkship handbook that's really geared towards students who are most underrepresented in this process, first-generation students, students of color, on demystifying the clerkship process and walking them through how they can apply and be successful in chambers. And it includes a lot of great advice and insights from our amazing community members as well. So we are fortunate to have an awesome group of volunteers, including one of our guests here, Grace, who helped put that together. And I really encourage anyone who is even remotely considering clerking to check it out. And I hope it's something that helps you along your way.
That's fantastic. I think it's so great, all the work you're doing, just to sort of, as I said, demystify this process. I will make sure to include a link to the clerkship guide and to TAP in the show notes. So if you're listening and you want to learn more, there is more to learn. But we have a great group of people together to talk about their clerkship process, what they've learned, maybe some surprises, maybe some challenges, maybe some brass tacks tactical suggestions. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to call on each of you. This is the law professor hat coming on briefly to introduce yourself. Tell me and our listeners what you're doing now, where you clerked, if you have already clerked or where you're going to clerk, And then maybe I was hoping each person could sort of start by spending a few minutes talking about your clerkship process. So not necessarily what you did once you got there, if you've already done it, but the process of securing that clerkship, which is obviously our topic for today. So I was hoping we could start with Grace Zelfant.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Grace Zelfant. I am a senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Northern California in our racial and economic justice group, where I do some appellate advocacy, some trial work, some legislative work, a whole mix of things. And I'm a very proud former clerk of the Honorable Consuelo B. Marshall in the Central District of California, and for the Honorable Ann Claire Williams in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Both of my judges are beyond phenomenal human beings, and I still am in close contact with both of them and love them with my whole heart. And I've become kind of a clerkship advocate for everyone. I think clerking was the best experience I've had. I love my job currently, but I still reflect on clerking. It's just, you know, magical in terms of developing me as a lawyer, making me a better lawyer, and really opening my eyes to the practice of law and its importance in our society generally. I was one of those folks in law school who did not apply for clerkship. I remember very distinctly, I think probably my second year, someone had told me at that time, I thought I wanted to be a law professor. And think someone had told me, oh, you should clerk if you want to be a law professor. So I, you know, tramped into the career development office, asked someone about clerkships, and they said, oh, your grades are okay. You probably can't clerk. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I just kind of gave it up from there.
Wow.
And then it came to my third year of law school. Back in the day when I applied, that's when you applied to clerkships, was the beginning of your third year. And I remember everyone was stressing out applying to clerkships. And I was like, I'm not doing that. That sounds very stressful. Everyone seems really, really, all the nerves, all the anxiety that you have in law school was amped up. And I was very lucky to have a job after law school. So I was like, why am I going to go apply to this job? It's going to pay a lot less than the job that I have lined up. I don't know what it is. And, you know, in my head too, all judges were kind of old men who wrote laws, very boring, very dry. And I was an aspiring civil rights lawyer. So that didn't make much sense to me. So I did not apply to clerk right out of law school and kind of just erased it from my brain. Fast forward my first year of practice, a close friend of mine and a mentor who was in our Balsa reached out and said, hey, my judge is going to be hiring. I think you should apply. And I was like, apply for what? She was like, to clerk. And then she kind of broke down what a clerkship was, why the experience had been so great for her, and told me about her judge. I Googled her judge, and that was Consuelo B. Marshall, and just was in awe of her background. First woman who had been city council in LA, first woman, like everything, first Black woman, everything, and just such a leader and a powerful force of good for everyone behind her. She was always trying to reach out, always trying to help people. I was like, this woman is amazing. I want to work for her. And then I got very, very lucky to get that clerkship after my, I think I started after my second year of practice. And from there on, I was hooked. And that it was actually my first judge who very strongly encouraged me to apply for my second judge, and also phenomenal experience.
That's great. And one of the things that I really love about your story, Grace, is the fact that, you know, I think sometimes we start this conversation of like, how do I get a clerkship, with the assumption that everybody knows why they want one, knows that they want one, knows that they can get one. And that's like such an important step zero, or step zero, one, two, and three, that sometimes gets passed over, and especially gets passed over for folks who aren't sort of told that this is important or why it might be a good fit. And without that one connection, who knows what would have happened, you know, to the rest of the trajectory. So I think that's so important that that's where your story starts, and that you fell in love with clerking by clerking. I just think that's fantastic. Let's go to Justin. How about you? You go next.
Thank you so much, Jonah. And it's wonderful to be with you all. I am a current clerk at a U.S. District Court. I'll be clerking next year on a state Supreme Court. I'm also, for folks who have come to law school through different pathways, I'm also in my 30s. I had a career for about 7 years before school, and worked a little bit after graduating. I came to clerking really unintentionally in some ways. In undergrad, I took an education law class where I learned about the legal strategy and all the organizing that had happened to lead to Brown versus Board of Education. And that set me on what was originally a path to education policy. I was a teacher. I worked for 6 years at an advocacy organization, helping manage digital data operation systems. I had a direct report. I was very engaged in my work. But the thing that was missing was a chance to actually work on a lot of the substantive issues that I had seen in my classroom. And so that originally led me to Berkeley for a Master of Public Policy. I took a law school class on education law that really got me thinking about the opportunities and constraints that could be brought to bear on education issues from a legal perspective. So I ended up in the law school originally intending to be a policy lawyer. And it was through doing public interest, a lot of public interest internships throughout law school, that I realized that I wanted to make litigation a cornerstone of my career and a cornerstone of my practice. Still hadn't really thought about clerking until I learned about the Appellate Project and was paired with a mentor and went to so many programs and met wonderful folks like Javeria and everyone else here on the podcast and met so many folks who had such positive experiences and really let me both see myself in a role like that and also understand the value that that could have to support my own career goals around civil rights and educational equity. Tried a first round of career of clerkship applications, didn't make it, but I went into a wonderful public interest fellowship after graduating where I had a chance to work on different stages of litigation. I had a chance to practice picking apart legal issues and teeing up recommendations for the nonprofit that I was working at and for our co-counsel. And I loved my job so much so that it actually made it a lot easier to apply for clerkships a second time around and talk about a lot of those experiences that I had built since law school. And so, you know, very fortunately, as I was in the middle of applying, a position opened up for a newer judge, and that's where I am now. And I'll be working for another judge who's recently taken the bench on the state Supreme Court after this.
Fantastic. I love that openness to applying again, right? I think some students go into the clerkship process and think it's this one-time shot. And if they don't get it that first time, it's over. And having been on every side of it now, myself included, right? Being a law clerk, being a student, now being a professor, encouraging my students to apply. Sometimes it does take one or two or even three times to get that clerkship. But at the end of the day, the only person who knows that is kind of you and your path. And so I think that's so exciting. And also that you did it after some practice. I think that's great. Megan, how about you tell us a little bit about who you are and your clerkship process?
Absolutely. So I'm very happy that you made that statement before I began my story, because that was kind of my story. But before I get into that, I will start my clerkship in a couple of months in August in the Southern District of Mississippi. And I'm now in my second year of practice. I'm an associate at Sidley Austin LLP. And my story was very similar to starting off my application process. I think at the end of my 2L year, no one really kind of told me how important it was to start early in looking for a clerkship. And I just knew that I needed a clerkship. I knew I wanted to practice in the appellate space. I knew I wanted to maybe be a federal judge. And I just, as a first time law student, the first generation law student in my family, I just wasn't sure exactly how to get there. So luckily, I had like this angel of a judge. I was a judicial intern for two different judges, one in the Southern District of Mississippi, Judge Carlton Reeves, and then, of course, in the Fifth Circuit for Judge Catherine Haynes. And Judge Reeves became a huge mentor to me. I truly tell people when I speak to him, like, he's like my favorite uncle, like a dad. Like, I talk to him often, once every 2 weeks, if that, or once a month. Like, we talk a lot. And he really pushed and encouraged me to apply for clerkships. My clerkship opportunity, the one that I have or will be starting soon, came through him. He was like, hey, I have a colleague that I think that you will be great for. And at that point, I had applied to maybe 60 judges on Oscar, and I've had maybe 4 interviews, and I just never got the offer. I would make it to the second round of interviews, and I never got the offer. So at that point, I had given up. I was like, you know what, judge, I don't want to do this anymore. And he was like, yeah, I hear you, but send me your resume. And so I sent him my resume. I sent him my writing sample. And the next day, or maybe the next week, I got a call from my judge that I will be clerking for. And he was very into me. I'm originally from Mississippi. He's in Mississippi. He really liked the fact that I went to Howard Law and all the things that I have accomplished. And it went from there. And I just knew that this was meant for me. And I can't say exactly what I will learn in this process. I just know that my judge is awesome. He's very hands-on and he's very willing to teach. He's very excited to be a mentor, and I'm excited to learn from him.
What a path to your clerkship as well. And for those who don't know, right, Oscar is a centralized, basically database or application management system for the federal, for all the federal judges. I'm sure we'll talk about that shortly. But what you're hearing, if you're listening to all these, the through line of these three stories is there's application, but then there's also being out there and figuring out how you fit. And that, I love that that's part of your personal story, Megan. So thank you for sharing that. Ramon, I'm sorry to hit you last, but I'd love to hear a little bit about who you are in your clerkship path.
Thank you so much for having me here. I am currently a second year associate at Williams & Connolly in DC, and I will be clerking starting this August for Judge Todd Hughes at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So I see a lot of similarities in everyone who's spoken before me with my process as well. I initially applied for clerkships at the end of my 2L year and had no success. And so at that point, it was a bruising experience. And so I thought, I'm done. I'm not going to do this. And then I heard about the Appellate Project and applied to be a mentee and was able to have two fantastic mentors through TAP. And, you know, I expressed my interest in doing appellate work and I explained, you know, kind of what happened with my clerkship process to date. And I don't think it's for me. And they both encouraged me to keep going with it. So I was interested in clerking in the DC area, specifically the Federal Circuit and the U.S. Court for Federal Claims, because they have jurisdiction over government contracts, which was an interest of mine. So I had applied through Oscar. I also sent out paper applications to all of the judges on the Federal Circuit and Court of Federal Claims, and had reached out to some former clerks of judges at the Federal Circuit, but things still weren't clicking. And so one of my mentors, this was not long after President Biden had been elected, sent me a Bloomberg Law article discussing that one of the judges on the Federal Circuit was going to go senior, and so President Biden would have the chance to nominate a new judge. And he was basically, you know, sending me this article to just let me know, put it on my radar that, you know, there's going to be a new judge. This is something that you can try for. But the article specifically talked about, it was an interview with several of the judges on the Federal Circuit discussing what they wanted to see in a new judge. And one of the judges said, you know, we need more diversity on the bench here, but not just with judges, also with practitioners who are coming before us, with clerks. And so because I was interested in the Federal Circuit and I'm pretty active on legal Twitter, I decided to follow this reporter on Twitter. And I saw that she had done basically a tweet thread kind of summarizing the article. And there was that one quote from that judge, Judge Hughes, discussing diversity at, you know, at different levels. And at that point, I, you know, I hadn't found anything yet. And so I said, you know, I have nothing to lose. And so I responded to that tweet of the reporter's. And I said, you know, I'm the editor-in-chief of a tech team law journal. I'm interested in government contracts, which is part of the court's jurisdiction. I'm both Black and queer. And, you know, I've applied to all of these judges on the Federal Circuit, including this one that you're quoting. I just need a chance. And so about 2 hours later, I got a notification that that reporter had retweeted my tweet. And I was just like, wow, I was not expecting that. And then maybe an hour after that, I got a phone call with a 202 area code, which is DC. And I really started to freak out. And I picked up the phone and it was a clerk in Judge Hughes' chambers asking if I wanted to interview for a clerkship starting in 2023. And so I excitedly said, yes, I would. And so, yeah, went through the interview process. And so, yeah, so that's that in a nutshell is how I got my clerkship.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. It's so funny because I think the common advice that I hear, at least at my law school, which I actually think is probably good advice for 95% of the world, is that there's a process for clerkships. You just kind of got to go through the process. And then at the end, hopefully you end up in the game of musical chairs with one of the seats. And for all of you, there's a part of that, but there's also a part of proactivity of building a network and using your network to learn about whether it's new jobs or a job that you didn't even know was the right job for you. And I just think that's fascinating. So sometimes when I do these panels, I sort of like do a couple of questions and let everybody answer, but I want this to be the most brass tacks, tactical next 20 minutes for anybody listening. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to throw out some topics and just get some thoughts from each of you on those topics. So if you have a thought, either jump in or I'll try to, you know, keep a cue. But let's start with that application process. So Megan brought up OSCAR for the federal system. Some states have set systems, others don't. What are some things about the application process that you wish you knew before you were going through this that you know now about getting sort of getting that opportunity? So who has thoughts on applications?
Not to be the law student who challenges the question, but I think one thing that's important for you to think about as a way of answering this question is really to start with why. And I think something that helped me was being clear about my reasons for a given court or clerkship, and more broadly, being clear about what I wanted out of a clerkship and what skills I was bringing to the table. And then I think the inverse of that is in turn being flexible about how you get there. And to paraphrase something, I think actually you've said, Jonah, on a prior episode, you know, is to really not self-select out because you haven't had a particular experience, but to be intentional about what you want out of a clerkship, to be intentional about some courts and judges that might really fit that, and then also to be flexible about some other places that maybe are a different way of getting at that. So for example, if you're really interested in appellate experience, yes, there are certainly the federal courts of appeal, but there are also state appellate courts. If you're really interested in administrative law, yes, there's, you know, the District of DC and the DC Circuit, but there's also tons of administrative hearings that happen in your local jurisdictions. And certainly those could use a smart, dedicated law clerk as well. And so I think in being flexible about our goals, it can be a way to kind of kickstart the process before getting into the brass tacks of making a spreadsheet, having a tracker of sort of when you want to apply and keeping track of the deadlines and all that jazz. But I really think starting with that understanding helped me sustain myself throughout the long application process.
Absolutely. I think that makes a ton of sense. Others?
I'll just add that I think it's helpful to think outside of the box. And so it can, I know for me in law school, I heard a lot about OSCAR. And so, but at the same time, and so my first time applying for clerkships, that's all I did was just submit applications through OSCAR. And I think my mentors through TAB encouraged me to kind of step outside of that box and sending paper applications to judges. I'm not shy, so I would sometimes just call chambers and just ask for forgiveness if they got upset, but just to see, and you know, if I didn't see them listed on OSCAR, but I was interested in applying for a clerkship with them. And so I think that was really helpful for me. And as a result, I ended up getting my clerkship through a paper application. Mm-hmm. He was not soliciting clerks through OSCAR. So I think realizing that there's, you know, different paths during the application process. Most people do get their clerkships through OSCAR, but there are other ways.
Absolutely. And the reality is, I used the musical chairs metaphor a little bit earlier, but it's this weird musical chairs game where it's basically 1,000 games with where each person is in charge of one chair. And so maximizing the number of chairs you might be able to sit in is one mental model for being able to get a clerkship. But at the same time, as you both have mentioned, right, you want to make sure it's the right clerkship for you, whether that's the right judge, the right geographic location, the right type of court, the right type of mentor. You know, you can't optimize for all of those things, but you can absolutely optimize for however many that you so choose. It just may limit the number of chairs, not to make the metaphor go too far. Grace, I saw you had something you might want to add on applications.
Yeah, I mean, and my thought is, you know, it's not so much dealing with the paper application piece or how to apply it. I think one piece of advice I always give folks, especially folks that are interested in clerking that, you know, are past that one day in their 2L year where they've given it all and they're feeling exhausted, I always am telling students, you know, stay open, stay ready, and stay growing. Staying open is saying, yes, you didn't get a clerkship your first shot. That's fine, but stay open to the process and keep telling people that you are looking for this opportunity. Let your mentors know at your organization you're working, your mentors, your law professor. You have to continue to stay open and pursuing that. And you need to stay growing, building your experience. I think Justin had a really great example of that where, you know, his fellowship before his clerkship, he was getting skills that he was later really able to capitalize on. And I've seen that often too, where judges, you know, will reach out to me and say, I want to hire somebody that has, you know, 2 years of practical experience. I want someone that has this type of experience. So if you're saying growing, you're actually becoming a better clerkship applicant. You're not going to be at your peak performance as a 2L. You're probably going to be a stronger clerk after you have actually done some practicing of law. And the third thing is staying ready, because sometimes applications, especially after law school, come up very quickly. I mean, Ramon's example is wonderful. I've never heard anyone getting a clerkship off Twitter before, so that's fantastic. And I love it so much. I remember cold calling someone that I knew from my law school. I had been several years, but a clerk I knew reached out to me saying, we need to hire someone. This is the person. This is the kind of person we're looking for. And judge wants to interview them this week. Who do you know? Right. And because the person I reached out to was able to get her stuff together very quickly. And this was someone who hadn't applied before, but she was just ready. You know, she stayed ready. She had an updated resume. She was able to get her application quickly. She was able to get that opportunity. And so I think as, you know, you continue your career, you might not be thinking about clerkships every day. But when you do think about it, kind of update your materials, make sure that if you do get that kind of question, if you're interested in this clerkship, you're ready to apply. Your letter of recommendation writers know, you know, that you're still applying, things like that. So you stay ready to jump on the opportunity as soon as it presents itself.
Yeah. And on top of that, one thing that you said, Grace, really struck me was that that judge was looking for a particular kind of law clerk. And something that I've seen, so what the three of you have all talked about, is that you grow as a candidate. You're a different candidate in 2L year, 3L year after you've practiced. And the idea might be, well, you're growing, but the judge is staying the same. And in reality, you know, what I've seen is that judges tend to hire similar kinds of candidates. They want candidates who have the experience they're looking for, the law schools they're looking for, the diversity they're looking for. And the problem is, if they're not hiring for that spot the year that you are applying, you may be the perfect candidate. You're just the perfect candidate for the wrong year. And so the same judge that said no to you in one year might jump for joy and ask you to be their first choice the next year, because again, these are small chambers. And so remembering that it's not necessarily a vendetta on you if you don't get a job, it's just you and the timing. And the more cycles you participate in, the more potential for serendipity on timing. So I think you're growing and the judge may need different things at different times is also really, really important. Megan, were you going to jump in?
Yeah, I was going to jump in. One, I'll just touch on that last point that you made, Jonah, which is pretty much my story with my judge. I had interviewed for him my 3L year and he said like, hey, like I'm newly appointed. I kind of want more experienced people as my clerks, but I will keep you in mind as I like move forward in this process. And the following year, he reached out and was like, hey, are you still interested in re-interviewing? And that's how we kind of got the ball rolling. But I also think it's important that even with the application materials, that students remember to have great relationships with people. Build those relationships with those around you, network well, and be the type of person that remains in their mind. I don't really know how to give examples of how to be that person. I also, similar to Ramon, am not a shy person. And so I will happily reach out to people. I will make phone calls. I will send emails or LinkedIn messages to have those connections, but to also foster those connections. And I think from all of our stories, or most of our stories, there are those connections with people, whether it was a retweet or if it was a friend reaching out about a clerkship. For me, it was the judge himself after another judge had recommended me. Having those relationships and fostering those relationships, having people who will go to bat for you and speak kindly about you and speak amazing things about your work really will pay off in the end. So on top of being an amazing candidate on paper, from what I've seen, that's not all judges are looking for. You can be great on paper and still not be chosen. But having those connections, being a good person, someone fun, just a different type of person that they're looking for will make you stand out.
Does anybody have thoughts on what you're putting on that paper, right? There's not that much paper that the judge looks at when they're looking at your application, right? I mean, in max, it's a cover letter, a resume, a writing sample, and a few recommendations. What are your thoughts on sort of how to maximize those, I don't know, maybe 20 sheets of paper that that judges or their clerks are going to look at when they're screening you?
Just on networking, as a really quick example, I got involved in the local Asian Pacific American Bar Association of the jurisdiction I was in. After graduating, Went to a holiday party, started building relationships, not because I wanted to clerk, but just because I wanted to get to know other attorneys in my community, and eventually was comfortable enough where I built a relationship with one of the leaders of that association who flagged for me that Asian Pacific American individual had recently been confirmed for a judgeship and was seeking clerks. And I actually not thought about that particular court until this person who I'd gotten to know had told me about it. And so you can learn a lot just by being involved and tactfully, respectfully, though, sharing with folks, especially more senior attorneys who you've built relationships with, sharing with folks your career goals, which is why mentorship programs like TAP are so invaluable. With respect to paper, let me say two things that might be helpful as far as written materials on writing samples. I found it's certainly been helpful in my own practice, and I feel it might be helpful for folks putting together writing samples, to really consider writing samples that show your legal analysis and that show that are somewhat reflective of the court or the type of clerkship you are applying to. So for example, if you're choosing between, say, a memorandum or a writing sample that has some more case law analysis and something that maybe is a little more academic, think about ways maybe you can present the more litigation-focused piece first, or think about other ways you can make your legal analysis shine. There are certainly conversations to be had about valuing one type of writing over the other generally, but in this particular setting, I think it can be helpful to really show someone reviewing your application your legal analysis skills and the skills you'll be bringing into chambers. Similarly, on cover letters, I find it's really helpful to have a cover letter that really tells your story succinctly, but that tells your story and gives a narrative to and draws some through lines to what is on your resume. So that might be looking at your resume at one glance, but can look at your cover letter and understand how the dots connect. And most importantly, how those dots will bring to bear on particular skills in chambers. So instead of simply saying you're an aspiring federal public defender, talk about the clinic that you did, the skills you built representing a client, and how those skills might impact the work of analyzing and responding to motions in chambers.
Yeah, I think that's great. Other thoughts on what should go on your paper materials?
I'll jump in really quickly since I'm not a clerk yet and I haven't looked at all materials, but from what I have experienced, clerks are looking at so many applications, so many of them look the same. And what I was told would make you stand out is if you want to be a federal clerk, any judicial clerk for that matter, but specifically a federal clerk, there should be no grammar mistakes on your cover letters. There shouldn't be any mistakes on your resume, because that could be automatically, like it could automatically delete you from the process. And so I made sure that everything was perfect. I didn't check things once, twice, three times. I'm talking maybe 10 times. And then I'd have a group of people, not just one person, to go through it and to give feedback and to catch mistakes. So on top of what Justin said, from a technical matter, make sure the materials that you present are perfect, because judges are looking for great writers and people who can catch those mistakes, because they also don't want those mistakes in their opinions.
100%. Other thoughts?
I was just going to add also on the cover letter. This is something, a lesson that I learned through TAP. When I wanted to clerk because I kept hearing individuals who had clerks say, oh, this was such a great experience. My judge is such a fantastic mentor for me now. And so as a 2L, I'm thinking, I want that too. And so when I was writing my cover letter, I'm, you know, saying, I want to clerk for you because I think you'll be a good mentor. And when I started working with my mentors through TAP, one of them mentioned to me, they're like, you know, that's great, but you haven't really spelled out why you're going to be an asset for the chambers, because you are there to work and to assist them in their work. And so just wanting a mentor is not going to cut it. And so just as Justin was saying, you know, really highlighting the, you know, experiences that you've had that you feel is going to make you an asset to chambers, I think that was really helpful, because it was confusing to me, because everyone talked about these great like mentors and relationships with judges. But at the same time, I didn't realize when I was a 2L that I also needed to show why I was going to be an asset to them.
Yeah, I think that's true in another piece of paper too, which is the recommendations, right? As someone now in the position of writing recommendations, I'm always forcing myself to talk about not why it would be great for the candidate, but why it would be great for the judge to hire the candidate, which is not necessarily your base instinct. Speaking of recommendations, anybody have thoughts on recommendations, who to get them from, how to ask, what you're looking for, anything like that?
I mean, I'll say that recommendations are tremendously important. And I think the most important piece of them is not who has the fanciest title that's writing your recommendation. It's great if your dean has a fancy name and writes, you know, that you're a great student. Fantastic. But what will really stand out, and I know for me it was something that really helped, is I had a mentor who I'd worked with and done a lot of work. And she wrote me like a 4-page letter of recommendation, like really going into details about what I had done, what I had worked with her on. And something that someone had given me advice for before, which I like to pass on, is in order to help your recommender give you a recommendation that's going to be more substantive, try to help them and make sure they have your resume. Make sure they have, you know, summaries of things you've worked with them on. If you're their research assistant, highlight some of the work you've done so that they can copy and paste. I've written letters of recommendation. It's hard being on the other side. So anything you can do as a student or an applicant to kind of make that job easier. Obviously, you don't want to be pushy, but I think just kind of asking that recommendation, what can I do to help make your writing process easier? Is there information I can provide to make that easier and make it an ongoing dialogue? I think the recommenders appreciate that. And also the substance of your letter will say more, because most judges really care about, you know, someone that's seen your work, can speak to you as a writer, can speak to you as, you know, a student or a professional. And those letters that really make clear they know you and know your work really stand out in a sea of a lot of recommenders that kind of just say, great student, will be a great clerk.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all they can say. And so the more help you can give, I don't think there's any professor on the planet who doesn't want someone to give them more data points to help them write the letter, because they're taking the time to write the letter. They want it to be as good as possible. They may not use all those data points, but I'm with you, Grace. I think that makes a lot of sense. Other thoughts on recommendations or other parts of the application?
I'll just say, for me, when I was, I had a specific course, admin law course in law school, and was very engaged in it. I would often talk with the professor after class, you know, to ask questions. And when it came down to the final, I just didn't perform as well as I had hoped to, and it ended up being one of my lower grades in law school. And so I talked to that professor and kind of just like, you know, discuss not only the exam, but points that I was missing and how I could improve. And so that professor, she ended up being one of my recommenders. And so when I interviewed for my clerkship, my judge brought up that lower grade. And so I was able to say, you know, I know that it's lower than my other ones, but I really worked with this professor on how to improve. And she's now one of my recommenders. And it's funny because I talked to several of his former clerks and they had all told me he never calls the recommenders. And so when I got my clerkship, when he called me, he said, oh yeah, I just got off the phone with that professor.
Wow.
and so she was able to, you know, just back up everything that I had said. And it was really instrumental in getting, I think, and helping me get my clerkship. And so I always recommend that to students, to if you feel like you might have a weak spot in your academic record, it's always great if you can just talk to that person who gave you the grade. If you, they may not be your recommender, but they, at least you can say like, hey, I've talked to this person, I've reached out, I've been proactive about this. And if you can get them to recommend you, I think that's even better.
Yeah, it's thinking about that whole package, right? Because it's the judge isn't going to be there to ask you questions when they're deciding, are you one of these people that I'm going to spend time learning about? Because as somebody said earlier, there are, in some cases, I think I've heard judges here in DC who get over 1,000 applications for each spot. Like once you're there, you want that package to be complete. And I think that's really smart, Ramona, of really thinking, not just what are my strengths and how can I emphasize those, which is important, as Grace was pointing out, but also how can I account for the perceived weakness or the weakness on the page as well. So we're getting close to the end of our time. We haven't talked at all about interviews. So before I sort of go around the horn one more time for suggestions, I just want to see if anybody has anything on interviews once you get through that paper part of the process.
I can jump in really quickly. I think it is important for students, like I said, outside of the paper, to just like be a real human in your interview, like be yourself, because that's who the judge is going to see every day. And it is easy to put on like that corporate face and sit in front of them and sell yourself. But when you sell your real self, who you really are, who they'll see every morning at the coffee station, who they will sit and speak with about a case, even if you, you know, may disagree on how the case should come out. If you are yourself, your true self, that really speaks to the judge, and that will determine which way it will go, how you will be hired, if you will be hired. And so I encourage everyone to just put on your true face, take off the corporate face, show yourself to your judge, and leave that on the table.
The two big things I'll say is do not be a jerk. Do not be a jerk. That's like rule number one. And that is, don't be arrogant. Don't tell the judge how brilliant you are. Don't be rude to the judicial assistant who's trying to set up the thing. Just be kind, because I know a lot of judges will say, if you're mean to my assistant, like, it's dead in the water, like, it's done. So rule number one, be a nice person. And rule number two, make sure you know the clerkship you're interviewing for. You know, you should definitely know the basics of chambers. You shouldn't walk into a district court clerkship and talk about how you're going to write a dissent on the opinion. Like, that makes no sense. You shouldn't walk in and talk about how you really care about doing only criminal work and your judge doesn't do criminal work. Like, you just need to make sure you know the basics of the job you're interviewing for, and be a person. I think what Megan said is exactly on point. Be yourself, be someone that you would want to hang out with all into the night discussing law.
Justin, did you have something to add?
What I would add is to really show, don't tell in your preparation and your execution. What do I mean by that? On the preparation side, something that helped me at the start of the process, and then I did versions of this for subsequent interviews, was to be really clear about what parts of my experience I wanted to communicate and how different pieces of my resume, different courses, different clinical experiences, how those fit skills that I wanted to convey, picking up on the skills thread that we were just talking about. And so being really clear about, you know, what are the sort of two or three or five bullets that I want to convey about what I'll be bringing to chambers and what makes me unique. Not just that I was editor of a particular journal or that I had a particular position, but what does that say about the type of colleague that I will be, especially for a judge who really has you and maybe two or three or four co-clerks and or judicial assistant. What type of colleague will I be when the going gets tough, or when case law gets tricky or unclear, or there are tons of competing demands? What type of colleague will I be? What skills have I had that show why I'll be able to contribute uniquely in those scenarios? On the execution side, I feel it's really important in interviews to be specific and to make it really easy to for someone to understand what your answer is. And really what I mean by that is the acronym STAR, a situation, task, action, result, being able to convey what was the context that I was in that answers a particular question, what was I working on, what did I do to get there, and what happened. This doesn't have to be a huge production. For example, to determine our litigation strategy on a particular matter, I had a task to research a particular class action doctrine. I started with the background of the case itself. I went to secondary sources. I went to circuit case law. I checked with my supervisor. I wrote a draft. I discussed it with my supervisor, refined it, and in turn, we were able to brief internal counsel and decide on a particular course of action. And you can say all that without breaching confidentiality or being too specific or taking too much time. But I think the more specific you can be where you can be specific enables your interviewer to see, whether it's a clerk or a judge, enables your interviewer to really understand how you walk through either a legal or a non-legal problem and how you've done that in your career. And again, how you'll be able to bring that to chambers.
All right, team, we're getting close to the end. For those of you still listening, so glad you're still here. I like to end every episode of my podcast by letting the guest give a piece of advice. This has been an entire episode about advice, so I'm going to frame it slightly differently, which is, as we're leaving, maybe something that you wanted to cover that we haven't, or what's one thing that you wish you knew when you were going into the clerkship process that you would hope other people who are considering going through the clerkship process get to know at the beginning? And I'll start with Ramon and work around.
Sure. So I've touched on this a little bit, but for those of you who are Disney fans and have seen Zootopia, there's a Shakira song called Try Everything. And that was really my motto, especially once I got my top mentors. Don't be afraid to put yourself out there, make those cold calls, email people, connect with former clerks on LinkedIn if you can and ask if you can talk to them, you know, apply on Oscar, send out paper applications, really anything that you can do to get yourself out there. Students sometimes ask me about my clerkship process, and it's hard to replicate that. You're not necessarily going to be able to get a clerkship over Twitter. But the thing I think you can take away from it is to just be open to hustle, basically. And if one thing doesn't work, try something else. I think kind of going in with that spirit can be really helpful.
Megan?
Yeah, I think the one thing that would have been important for me to know at the time, and hopefully it helps someone else, is that all you need is one yes. You're not looking for everyone to say yes. The process itself can be very discouraging, especially for lawyers of color, diverse lawyers. It can be tough, an uphill battle, but just know that all you need is one yes. If you know your why, if you know that this is what you want to do, that one yes is going to feel like a million, and it is going to set you up for the rest of your career, I feel like. And so just look for that one yes. Don't give up. I had said previously, I was very much over it after all of my many no's. And that was a two and a half year process until I got that one yes. And now I will start my clerkship in 2 months. So just look for the one.
Fantastic. Justin?
Clerking and by extension, the clerkship application process is really an opportunity to learn about yourself as a legal thinker, as a worker, and as a leader. And I say that to say that, yes, it is challenging. Yes, it takes a lot of work. Yes, there's a lot of no's. But if you figure out what you're excited about as a practitioner and as a, you know, as a human being, and bring relevant parts of that into the process that show, you know, a judge and anyone else looking at your application, your skills, that show your experiences, that show not just what type of clerk you'll be, but what kind of member of, as my incoming judge says, what type of member of the future clerk family you will be, you'll find the chair that fits for you.
Grace?
Kind of along the same line, there's so many awesome judges out there. There really are. I mean, so many all over the country doing, you know, federal work or other judges. And your clerkship is really going to be driven by that person or that bench that you're working on. And there's so many great opportunities. And I think that's the reason you should never count yourself out, and you should keep looking for a good fit, not something that, you know, you heard someone else did and it sounded fancy, but really something that fits your career and a person who, you know, would fit you as a mentor. And that's different for every person. And there's so many options out there. So I think keep looking, keep going out there. And I'm biased. My judges are the best in the entire world because I love them deeply. But there's so many great judges that you can find them one out there for you. Staying open and keep looking.
Fantastic note to end on. I want to thank all of you. I want to thank TAP for allowing me to partner with you in this, what I truly believe is important and foundational work for our profession and its future. I'm not going to volunteer all your speakers, but do feel free to at least reach out to me and reach out to TAP. That's our duty as folks who have had this opportunity, is to help others do the same. That's sort of the purpose of this episode. Purpose of TAP, the purpose of the podcast. We all kind of have that in common. So I'm just so grateful for that opportunity and to get to meet these four fantastic people and see my dear friend once again. So thank you so much. Again, I am Jonah Perlin, and this is the How I Lawyer podcast. Thanks to podcast sponsor Law Pods for their expert editing. If you're a lawyer considering starting your own podcast, definitely check them out at lawpods.com. And thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, I hope you'll consider sharing it with friends and colleagues or on social media. And of course, if you haven't already done so, please sign up for the email list at howilawyer.com or subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. As always, if you have comments, suggestions, or ideas for the show, please reach out to me at howilawyer@gmail.com or @JonahPerlin on Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week.